Welcome into a Friday morning edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are talking a dominant Nets win over the Phoenix Suns, 104-82. Caris LeVert outplaying Devin Booker. Some notes from across the team, and then we'll get into a preview of Nets Nuggets tonight. Somewhere on your TV, I'm sure you can find it. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets micropod, where I, Gavin Shaw, former Suns beat writer, which comes into handy in this podcast, and my co-host, the great, the newly in shape, Josh Bass, join you to talk everything Nets.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say new in shape because if you looked at me, you'd see that that's clearly fake news, but hoping to get there one day with the stringent training regimen and diet my roommate, who is a bit of a workout fanatic, has me on.
Yeah, no, it's I was projecting forward, Josh. It's the same thing we do with the Nets every single day. And speaking of which, they're playing another team that has a real track record of projecting forward in the Phoenix Suns. And the Nets just came out and dominated them in the matchup of these two teams. And I find it so interesting because, like, on the surface, like, the Suns have a much better core than the Nets do in some ways. Like, the upside is definitely higher. I would say that's hard to argue. And, like, I think clearly, like, if you're drafting players from both teams, Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton would be the first two picks. And it wouldn't be particularly close. That being said, Phoenix is really bad this year, and in a lot of ways, this was, and we were saying this before the game, a must-win for the Nets, and they came out, and I described this to you as boring when we were talking about it pre-show, and you agreed with me, and they just cruised to a 104-82 victory.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely atypical for the Nets, because we all know that, listen, they get off to these hot starts in first quarters, the lead gradually slips away, and even if they have a 10-point lead at half, that's usually gone by about, what would you say, yeah, 8 minutes left in the third.
Yeah, it's fair.
That completely evaporates. But this was so weird that the Nets had a pretty decent lead at halftime, 10-point lead, and third quarter kept it even, and then fourth quarter just jumped out to a pretty much insurmountable lead where there was really no comeback ever from Phoenix. And maybe it's just due to an inferior opponent that really doesn't have any bite, but I don't know. We're looking now and Phoenix is up by 20 on Boston at the half, so they clearly do have some talent just by the pedigree of these guys on the roster. The Nets just played a clean game for the most part.
Yeah, and I thought Phoenix was going to come in and really play with a lot of fight because they were coming off a win over the Grizzlies that was very, very impressive, and currently they have, like, I think arguably their toughest stretch of the season where they're playing, like, six very obvious playoff teams, and obviously for whatever reason they're making do with Boston. I wouldn't be shocked if people are listening to this podcast tomorrow and they Google the final score and Boston ended up winning by five. But still, that's pretty impressive. And I think it's a testament to the kind of game the Nets played. And I think the microcosm of this game was the matchup between Caris LeVert and Devin Booker, which is what I was really looking at coming into this one. And something I was so fascinated with because those two are, like, two of my favorite players in the league, two of my most, like, beloved people in the league, like, for different reasons. Like, I have very strong emotional attachments to both those guys, and I think both of them have a chance to be all-stars going forward. And I think Devin Booker has a chance to be, like, really, like, a transcendental, like, superstar in this league. And I think Caris LeVert is maybe just a notch below that, but on this night, Caris totally dominates him. And the Nets-loving side of me was really into it. He was 10 of 16 from the field, guarding Devin Booker for most of the night on the other end, holds Book to 6 of 21 shooting, and you could argue it was just an off night, but just the way, like, Caris was harassing him, like, it just seemed like he was taking the matchup personally, and I was really into that. I thought that was great.
Yeah, no, I love that Devin Booker is not only going to be a transcendent superstar, he's going to be a transcendental superstar.
What is a Henry Ross, David Thoreau, Henry Thoreau?
He's one of those.
Yeah, he reads those books. That's all I was referencing. I don't know if he's good at basketball, but he's very into
Henry
philosophy.
Henry Allison and David Thoreau. Yeah.
Yeah, you know that 1 year of Kentucky education. It really gets you far.
Yeah. Wait, is his name David Thoreau? What's that guy's name?
It's like Henry David Thoreau. I think there is a Henry David Thoreau.
This is going to make it sound so stupid.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it's smart that we even, like,
do.
I think the fact that we even have, like, David a Thoreau. Guess at, like, who these people are is pretty impressive.
Yeah. We at least know that we're wrong and we recognize that. But, no, I think Booker, mean, he got 20, but he always, it's so hard to keep a player like him completely down. But he was 6 of 21 from the field, and I feel like every shot he hit was, he had to work so hard to even get looks off because LeVert was in his jersey every step of the way. I mean, there were one play where LeVert was too aggressive that ended the first half, where he was played like Kawhi Leonard, like, defense, and ended up fouling just because he was going for the block when he didn't need to.
Yeah.
But LeVert's defense was awesome. I mean, that's the type of person that he can really match up against because LeVert's so quick, and Booker's not the type of player like a LeBron James or a power wing that's going to go through you. But he just did an awesome job. Honestly, I've never been more impressed with LeVert's defense until Tuesday night.
Yeah, and then I thought offensively he was just so efficient. We mentioned 10 for 16, but I just thought this was like the best possible version of LeVert, where he wasn't trying to do too much, but was just really picking his spots. And obviously it helped that he was shooting well from range and like didn't have like the best defenders on him. But I just like the idea of LeVert as a player getting to the point of confidence that like on one end he's really going at Devin Booker, and then whenever, like, obviously, like, not that Booker's that intimidating defensively, but he was just willing to like attack whoever on the Suns, like knowing, like, except for maybe like a few possessions where Trevor Ariza was on him, he wasn't really going to have a challenge from them defensively. I just remember I can't remember who he blew by in the first half, or it might have been the beginning of the third quarter for that dunk, but it was just so easy. And then he had a play like late in the third, or it might have been early in the fourth, where he got Mikal Bridges on him. And he just, like, babied him. He, like, went in, did, like, the Jordan, like, fake half spin, which is just an awesome and, I think, like, underutilized move. And, like, give Bridges credit, like, he stayed with him. But then LeVert takes two more dribbles and, like, just does, like, a dream shake. And what's his name? Bridges was just, like, confused. He was just, like, turning on his heels and was like, where's the ball? And LeVert just lays it in. And it was just and again, like, LeVert should be able to score on a guy like Mikal Bridges. But just, like, the idea that he recognized who was guarding him, isolated himself, and then just destroyed the guy in front of him, just from a mentality standpoint, that's so encouraging to me.
Yeah, you could see that he learns every game, like, and he's developing, obviously he has moves, but people are starting to figure those out, and he's developing counters to those moves quicker than they're learning the original moves. So I don't know, it's great, and he's super fun to watch. I think that we kind of talked a little bit about saying, hey, he could be an all-star this year, but it's looking kind of realistic if he continues this, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to – we should do that at some point too, and like break down the rest of the field in the East. Obviously, it's like it's kind of contingent just on how many other guys there are. But yeah, if you can put up
– We can rule out – we can definitely rule out Crab, I think.
I don't – I mean, he could turn around. He's doing a lot of other stuff well. He's not shooting well. But yeah, now we can maybe rule him out. Yeah, I don't know. It's – I don't want to count my Caris LeVert chickens before they hatch all-star births, but I would be excited for him to make – an all-star game. And now that they're like televising the draft this year, I think it would be like very satisfying for Nets fans for LeVert to go last in that draft, because then they can just complain and be like, no one respects the Nets, no one respects Caris LeVert. I sent you a link on Twitter, Josh. We got a whole thing about like how we're not supportive enough of the Nets, or at least I'm not supportive enough of the Nets on this podcast. So I'd argue you're more negative than me in general. So I bet that extends to you too.
Yeah. But I do it out of a fanship. You just do it out of a kind of a blank slate, yeah, clinical critic of NBA.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think
you elitist Twitter NBA fan.
Oh, I was hoping you were gonna say cock, but all right. Okay, we'll wrap
try
it up
to keep
there.
Busy.
Yeah, appreciate that. All right. That's our first segment on Locked On Nets. We'll come back, finish talking about the surrounding notes on this Nets Suns blowout next on Locked On Nets. Peak ticket season in New York is fast approaching, and we know that you want to be a part of it. The NFL is in full swing, the Yankees are getting ready for a playoff run, and hockey and basketball are just around the corner. And there's no better option to get a great deal on attending any of those events than Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats allows you to sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for $20 off orders of $200 or more to save you even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Then use promo code Locked On for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code Locked On for $20 off orders of $200 or more. That's LOCKEDON. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. We are back. This is the Locked On Nets podcast. Gavin Shaw, Josh Bass. We went through Caris LeVert. I want to do what we do every podcast and talk about, or really just attack, I guess, Alan Crabb a little bit. I will start off with the positive that I was very impressed with what he did in just about every facet of his game that wasn't shooting the ball. Finished with 7 rebounds, had a really nice block. He had this beautiful pass in transition where I think it was Dinwiddie pushed it up to him and he just one-touched it over to Allen, like cutting in for a dunk. That was great. Yep. I thought defensively he was genuinely excellent the entire night. The shooting is still just awful. 3 of 12 from the field, 1 of 5 from three-point range. Josh, I did a little bit of research before we did this podcast. What would you guess Alan Crabb is shooting from two-point range on the season?
22%.
Wow, that was excellent. He is shooting 23% from two-point range this season. His splits on the season, and because his overall percentage is buoyed by his three-point shooting. He's 26, 28, 75 splits. If he does this the whole season, I think he will be the inventor of the 20-20-70 club.
Yeah, no, it's a rare club, and I think here's the thing with Alan Crabb. He's so frustrating to watch because, I don't know, I need to look at every three-pointer he made in Portland. I said I was going to do this last year because he seems like he's just, like, pushing the ball. I don't know. He has the weird hitch in his delivery, which all of a sudden popped up after, like, 20 games last year. I don't know what he's doing right now. I mean, it's good to see that he had the tangential parts of his game going last night. It's not usually something where he's consistent in that, but when he does get a shot back, that's what I want to see. I want to see him making the right passes. I want to see him digging in defense and getting steals and blocks and really stopping his man and making a commitment on that end, getting rebounds, fighting on the offensive boards. Because if he does that, he can be a decent all-around player. But I feel like with him, it's kind of one or the other. He's never having a complete game.
Yeah, no, it's extremely frustrating. Do you think there's another team in the NBA where he would still be in the rotation? Because I was just going through it, and like I genuinely like as bad as like even like a team that, like the Suns that sucks, like you're not playing him over like TJ Warren, like you're not playing him over Josh Jackson. Even if Josh Jackson is just as bad, you want to develop that guy, and he at least brings it defensively every night. Like so, I really couldn't think of a team where he'd be playing.
Maybe like a tank team like the Hawks or Knicks, but I don't know.
Hawks Suns, maybe.
I mean, yeah. Josh Jackson didn't barely play. Warren's out of the rotation now. Our boy Okobo, who looks like a young Brandon Jennings, I don't know. It was just 36 minutes of Isaiah Cannon. Or is it Cannon now?
He switched the pronunciation. Yeah, but obviously, serious. I mean, yeah, Cannon, I guess, is like an equivalent, but Cannon like shot over 50% in this game, which is something that Alan Crabb has not done all season, so I'll say that. Well, all right, last thing on Alan Crabb. I was on his basketball reference page. He has a nickname on that page. Do you know what that nickname is?
Crab legs.
No, I close. It's Cool Breeze.
What?
I don't know. I feel like it just has like something to do with like every time he goes to the bathroom, I bet he sprays like a lot of deodorant or like aerosol after, like Febreze after, and like everyone's like, wow, Cool Breeze, man, on the way out again. Love seeing that Cool Breeze. I don't know. That's how I picture where it comes from. If I ever get to interview him, that's gonna be the first thing I ask him. All right. Any other thoughts you had on this game? I had a couple, but I want to give you some time. I said for Josh.
I'm still shook by what you think the origination of Alan Crabb's nickname is. So I'll let you go ahead.
Okay, great. All right. I thought Ed Davis. I mean, I know we say this it's so funny because like I feel like as much as like we hate Alan Crabb on this podcast, we like love Ed Davis or we like
so
it.
Good.
We like Ed Davis. So like we always have like slightly like positive feelings towards Ed Davis.
I love Ed Davis. Consistent.
He had 9 and 12, and I just thought he made such an impact in this game. He was just hustling, like, every second he was on the court. Like, it felt like he impacted every single possession, which is such a rare thing for a role player to be able to do. But I just thought he had a great game. DeAndre Ayton, who's been prodigious for Phoenix, despite the fact that they've been bad overall, was just 6 of 17 from the field. And, like, credit Jared Allen as well. Like, he also played nice defense on him. But I was so impressed with, like, the effort that Ed Davis put out.
Yep, Ed Davis played well. I think Jared Allen had a decent game also. I mean, 5 assists for him. He's not a Nikola Jokic-like passer, but he can make the play when it's wide open. I think he's had some nice passes when he's catching the ball in the roll and dishing it out to the corner. So he's not a complete abomination passing the ball, which is always a nice value add for centers And also, let's talk about Spencer Dinwiddie, because this was a 10-12 point game early in the fourth quarter, and he came in and had seven very quick points, hit a wide open three, and had two layups where he really just drove to the basket, beat his man one-on-one, didn't need a screen, and got the easy finish. And I think that's what we've seen from Spencer, is that he is capable of creating easy buckets, and especially since his load is lessened from what it was last year, he has more energy to just go out and attack.
Yeah, I've said it a bunch of times, but I think he's like in the best shape of his career this season. Like, I don't think I've ever seen him, like, maybe small stretches last year, but just consistently be this explosive, and it's really exciting. Like, that, like, play where I think they got a loose ball, and then there was like 7 seconds left on the shot clock, and Kenny called a timeout, and they just inbounded it into Dinwiddie, and he faked a dribble handoff, and he like did like the Kelly Olynyk where he just turns and goes to the rim, and he just got by his man like so quickly. Like, the guy was even shocked that like Dinwiddie like even took a step, and he was already making a layup at that point. So I thought that was just great. I want to give a shout out, as always, to Joe Harris, who like finally like had a poor game shooting the ball from 3-point range, 1-6 after 7 straight where he was just on fire. Still managed a way to be efficient from the floor overall, went 4-5 from 2-point range, including just a nasty takedown of DeAndre Ayton where he just pivoted one way, and it was like, I think Richard Jefferson compared him to Kevin McHale, and then pivoted the other. And I was just like, I'm always like, again, like maybe this is like a little bit of basketball racism on my part, but I'm always just stunned by his athletic ability around the rim. And like, he's not like a great athlete, but he just has these small little spurts that are just awesome, where like just from like a standing position, he did like an up and under like on Ayton, and like to be quick enough to get that by like an athlete of DeAndre Ayton's caliber. And like, DeAndre Ayton is just a great, great athlete. I don't know. That was my favorite play of the game outside of maybe LeVert versus Bridges. So that really stood out to me.
Yeah, that was a nice one. I don't know. Ayton, I feel like he's a rookie, and rookie big men are usually pretty brutal on D, but his instincts just aren't there. He seems to react like a half step slowly. Yeah. It's like he's I feel like he's being controlled by someone playing 2K.
That makes sense. It's me. I made him have a bad game against
you. Are really bad at 2K, so it makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair. Wow. Okay. I can't believe you fit in an insult there. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I really wanted to go over. It was a good effort for the Nets. I think maybe let's see, how far are we into this? Yeah, we'll take one final break. We'll come back. We'll talk Nets Nuggets. We'll talk some major media covering the Nets. Sean Marks appearing on the Woj pod. Dan DeVigney of The Ringer, who he's from France. I believe he's Boris Diaw's second cousin, twice removed. He writes a piece every week on the 5 most interesting teams in the NBA, and he mentioned the Nets, so we'll get into that a little bit next on Locked On Nets. Is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors they hear on their podcasts. Our demographic is 98% male and more educated and earning more than traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast? Email me at gavinshall14@gmail.com. That is gavinshall14@gmail.com. One final time, you are locked on Nets, and they play the Denver Nuggets tonight. And that should be – I'm intrigued by that game, Josh, because I feel like the Nets are the Nuggets, excuse me, and I think I said this on a preseason pod we did. They're just kind of like a much better version of like the Nets. Like, they just have like a lot of guys across the board, like clearly have like a great infrastructure, like clearly have great team chemistry, assuming Isaiah Thomas hasn't ruined it already. Sorry, unnecessary shout at my guy. Love IT. But I love the way they play, and I feel like they're, again, just like this West Coast Nets with just way more talent at like every spot.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I think that the one opportunity I could see for the net, I think Jared Allen's obviously going to have his hands full dealing with Jokic and kind of dealing with the dribble handoff game that he and the Nuggets guards have, and also defending him on the perimeter. One thing they could take advantage on, just because Jokic isn't the most fleet of foot, hopefully getting some easy buckets on pick and roll.
Yeah.
I think D'Angelo Russell and Jared Allen have actually shown a pretty good connection this year, so maybe getting some easy opportunities that way. But the Nuggets defense has been pretty good this year. I mean, Millsap's back to full health, and he does make an impact just because he is so strong and so smart anchoring that defense.
Yeah, I wonder what that like Millsap-Jared Dudley matchup is like, and I think that's almost like a good matchup for Dudley.
Well, let's talk about this. Damari Carroll is probable for tomorrow. How do you see the starting lineup shaking out?
Right. I don't know. I mean, I think if Carroll's like, I have a feeling they're going to bring him off the bench the first game because that just seems like the Kenny Atkinson move to do. Though I think long term, I would be surprised if he doesn't start over Dudley. And I wonder if they like either play Dudley like 10 minutes a game, like, and bring him back in with the starters later in the game, or they just take him out of the rotation. Because to me, like, playing Dudley only makes sense with that starting unit where you at least, like, theoretically, like, have, like, some speed to, like, make up for the fact that, like, he's just, like, kind of a liability on the perimeter defensively and offensively. Obviously, he just, like, fits in very well with that infrastructure with D'Lo being so ball dominant. But I've in my mind, like, if you're not playing Dudley with the starters, like, I don't think you should be playing him. So I do wonder if they maybe limit Carroll's minutes a little bit to give Dudley some, because Dudley, I think, on the whole, like, has been a positive this year, or you just take him out of the rotation. So I'm interested to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, they'll probably ease him back in, but I mean, Damari Carroll's not a bad three-point shooter, and it's not like Dudley's been lighting the world on fire. The guy does make a lot of smart plays, but he's shooting 30% from the field. He's had a couple of careless turnovers, I thought, and obviously defensively, Carroll's a huge upgrade. So, again, as you said, they might kind of do a split of where Dudley's getting 20 minutes at the four right now, Rondé's getting 15, and Damari's getting the remainder, remaining 13, just for now, and see how that works. Because obviously Denver and then the Warriors, it's not exactly two great teams to ease yourself back in against.
But simultaneously, like, Dudley's like the worst guy to have out there against the Warriors. So, like, who knows? Like, maybe they play Rondé more. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see how that goes. All right, Nets making some media appearances this week. Sean Marks went on Woj's podcast, and I thought it was so interesting. He was, I don't know, maybe it wasn't that interesting, but it was just like he got into some of the details, and like, because we always hear like the Nets are like such a player-friendly organization, and you hear like quotes from players, like it's like every media day, it feels like someone's always saying like, yeah, like I can't imagine myself like anywhere else, and like then they're like, yeah, like I was telling all these free agents this offseason that like the Nets will treat you in like a way that like you just don't get with any other team. And I was wondering what that meant, and it just like, I just think it's that Sean Marks is so conscientious about being player first, and he was talking about how he'll like never, ever, ever go in the locker room except occasionally post game when he absolutely has to, but like he wants it to be like a space where players can say and do whatever they want. Like if they want to like shit talk Sean Marks, like that's absolutely okay. They can do that. Like that's it's a spot for them to be themselves, and just like the transparency throughout the organization, and how like he'd rather like consistently have tough conversations with players as long as he's being like open with them. And I thought it was intriguing because he specifically mentioned D'Angelo Russell as like a guy who like he had to have like a lot of those frank conversations with this offseason. And like I figure they were surrounding like the fact like, look, you have to play less selfishly, you have to be a quicker mover of the ball, and you have to get dramatically better defensively, or like you're not going to be on this team and you're not going to get a big contract. And he didn't like say that specifically, but that was kind of the subtext of all of it. So I just thought it was interesting to get a little insight into like how Sean Marks goes about running this organization.
Yeah, no, I think one of the big things about Marks is that he has experience both in management and also as a coach. And I think a lot of people don't have that, but it is underrated because you're getting the kind of both sides of the business and how as a coach you're working with players and how the general manager should act and how they relate to players. So getting that wealth of experience does put Sean Marks in a unique position. I mean, obviously we've seen that when you're doing the role simultaneously, it doesn't work out. Guys like Thibs, Stan Van Gundy, but also look at a guy like Steve Kerr, he's been a GM before. Now he's a coach. And having, I think, that dual experience over time is very helpful. Mm. I think Sean Marks is doing a great job. And Is he the first person to be a general manager coming from that Spurs system? I know we've seen a lot of coaches, guys like Jock Vaughn, James Borrego got a job this year. I'm sure there's plenty others, but I can't think of anyone that's kind of come under the RC Buford wing to go on to be another GM.
Yeah, I guess the only one you can kind of say was Mike Budenholzer sort of had the coach GM role for the Hawks last season, but then two seasons ago, but then he got that taken away from him smartly because that never, ever works out. But yeah, no, I think Marks is really the first one. He's obviously proven to be a big success. So maybe he opens it up for some of the other guys in that Spurs front office down the road. All right, let's finish up with this. Our guy, Dan DeVigney, wrote...
always gonna laugh at that.
Yeah, no, I know. It's good stuff. He writes his five most interesting teams in the NBA this week, which again, very happy he joined the Ringer because he was a guy I followed on Twitter and thought was like mildly funny, but I never like took the time to read his stuff because I refused to read Yahoo Sports. And now that
he's
on the
good at Yahoo,
yes, and now that he's on the Ringer, I'm watching, and I feel like I don't know, like to me, like all these like NBA writers like blend together now because it's like it's always like the same type of writing where it's like just like it's kind of like it's like a cross between like the Bill Simmons and like Zach Lowe school where it's like slightly funny, like very analytics heavy, and like all these guys kind of blend together and sound the same.
Bill Simmons is not doing analytics.
No. I mean, like he brings like the anecdotal like humor. I'm saying like it's a combination of like those two like distinct styles, but I don't know. So I think all these guys blend together, and like guys like Verrier and DeVinier, like they're all just like they're all fine. But anyway, see, I don't know. He's good enough. Yeah. So I thought it was interesting because like to me my first takeaway from reading this article was that I think the only time, and like this is not a shot at him, if you're a national writer, you shouldn't be watching the Nets that much, but I really think the only time he watched the Nets was probably against the Suns because that was like the only game he pulled references from. And he like had this whole paragraph at the end about like how the Nets like definitely aren't like probably aren't good, but they're definitely not bad anymore, which I'm not quite ready to rule out yet. And maybe he's right about, but it just seemed like he took a lot away from this one game when he could have been watching like some random like earlier season game like the Nets played in where they just like absolutely sucked and like maybe had a completely different reaction. But yeah, I don't know. It's nice to see the Nets get some attention, and like overall I liked what he wrote. And I was kind of surprised to see like he had a note in there saying like that the Nets were 16th in the NBA in defensive efficiency and 13th in offensive efficiency, which is probably something that I should be checking every day and should just know. But I was surprised that they were that high up in both, and that is kind of indicative of like a team's health and like I think a good sign for the Nets going forward.
Yeah, I mean, the offense has actually been pretty good. The one thing that's pushing it down is the turnovers.
And Alan
but just
Crabb.
Because the shot selection is the shot selection's really good, and they've kind of every year they have a little bit more of an ability to hit those shots, and then that's why you see them creeping up a few spots every year. I mean, are they going to finish 13th for the season? I don't think so. I think that maybe anywhere between the 15 and 17 range is more realistic, and then for defense, falling between 16 to 18, let's say. But that, you know what, that's a decent team. That's a team that can sneak into the playoffs if they finish at that respective spot for offense and defensive efficiency.
Yeah, I have a general feeling the defense probably isn't sustainable, but you bring back Damari Carroll, who like is on paper one of your best defenders, presumably Hollis Jefferson, starts playing more minutes. And I think it's interesting because we were talking about that bench unit this offseason as kind of like an offensive factor, and like what like Napier could provide a punch. Like Ed Davis will be such a big upgrade in the pick and roll. But in my mind, like defensively is where they're making a bigger impact, because like, again, like the Nets would bring in these guys who would just get run defensively last year. And you like, I mean, Davis, like in particular, is generally like, unless it's like just an overwhelming talented center, he's very, very effective on the defensive end. But I just think across the board, and like the ability to bring guys like Hollis Jefferson off the bench is really making their defense better. And I'm not sure, I don't think 16th is sustainable, but if they can finish anywhere ahead of 20, like I think that's just such a massive victory for Brooklyn, given where they've been the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if they can get there. I think they're playing hard. Obviously, the center rotation's kind of in line. Getting a guy like Damari Carroll, who's versatile, who can switch, will be a huge asset for the team.
Yeah. All right. I just got a text from my friend Matt talking about Christian McCaffrey's fantasy performance. Our mutual friend Matt, and how that helps my fantasy team. So I need to go gleefully rub it in to him that is happening. Josh, it's been a pleasure. Again, I want to, if you've listened this far, I want to like apologize for like the inconsistent podcast. The last 2 weeks, these are like the two busiest work months of my young career as a broadcaster. So I've been lapping it up in that, and just basically perpetually been in a car back and forth from upstate New York the last few weeks, and that is going to continue this weekend. So I think we'll very likely, the next podcast will be coming out Tuesday morning, which I apologize for. I know that's a lengthy delay, but it should be a good one because we'll have everything on the Nuggets and Warriors, and we'll try and fit in a few more next week. And then I'd say, again, like after November 22nd, we will have them out a lot more consistently. So we thank you for sticking with us on that front. Until then, be well. Enjoy your weekend. Peace out.